At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Outstanding. Got it.
What would you ask if you had opportunity to sit down and talk to CFO who is so savvy, not only in accounting and finance and tax preparations, but really understand the nature of the business, especially subject matter expert in small businesses? Would you be able to ask the questions that are pertaining to you, or specifically if you are a small business run by woman or disadvantaged woman, or simply someone that did not have enough or financial literacy? I know this is a very hot topic, and I cannot wait to introduce today's guest. Welcome, welcome, my friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the world messenger, and I'm inviting for another epic episode of Legacy Leaders Show. Today, I have a very special guest who I had a privilege to be introduced to, a very great friend of mine. And as they say, the rest is history. When you find one exceptional human being, the others follow. And without further ado, let me introduce you to Jeremy Tucker, who is not only being a financially savvy accountant, tax preparer, insurance, and anything in between, and running great enterprises and supporting others to do the same with phenomenal education, with masters and doctorates. Oh my goodness, which I will actually let him to just tell us more about that. But the best part is also what he does and brings back to our community. Jeremy, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for allowing me to come and speak today and just talk about what I do, who I am, where I see things going, what I enjoy doing, what I want to be doing in the future, and what my passion is.
That sounds great. I mean, Jeremy, you have such an eclectic but also insanely powerful multi-pronged approach in your career. Obviously, beside having masters in science and accounting and taxation, also opportunity also to work with management and project management, quality management, doctorate in quality management alone, it's a huge, but then also master's business administration, bachelor's of science. You dabbled in sales and marketing, but you also dabbled in information technology aspects of it, but more than anything into finance. I am curious, how did you get into that?
So when I look at, so finance started about, I could say about 40 years ago. When I was in the military, I started doing my own taxes. And then I started doing taxes for people that I work with in the military, other soldiers. And then I started having a passion. I've always had a passion for numbers from an accounting standpoint. And then I just said, hey, I like doing taxes. Can I do your taxes? And so that's when it all started. I started doing taxes years ago, about 39 years ago now, and never advertised what I did. I just got out and communicated and talked to people. All my current business and all my current clients have all been obtained through word of mouth referrals. And then I realized, you know, I've done taxes in my younger years, got into sales and marketing from a financial side and insurance side. So I started working for a very large health insurance company, Blue Cross Blue Shield, worked in all aspects from record center management, went into finance and accounting, did that for a few years, went into sales and marketing, got fortunate and had a mentor that said, you know, if you really want to succeed and go forward, find out what your passion is, but you need to get yourself educated. So I went back, started school, got my undergrad degree from the University of Phoenix, went into, did sales and marketing because I love sales. I like marketing. I like talking to people, building relationships. Did that for a few years. And then I went back and got my master's degree. I said, hey, I love sales and marketing. I love all that stuff, but I want to understand technology. It was back when things were changing. The internet wasn't even around. It was back when you actually had to go to the library for reports and stuff. But I wanted to understand the technology behind it, how everything started to work. So I went back and got a master's in computer information resource management, not on the programming side, but the database side, understanding structures, how things work. And then I decided, I'm going to work, go in the IT project management, still doing my accounting work on the side, because that's my really where I've been at in my life. That is my passion. Finances, working with small businesses, working with large businesses, nonprofit organizations, just to get them where they need to be at. Going in, talking to folks, understanding what their dreams are, how we can make that happen. So after I did the master's degree, I went back 5 years later. I wanted to get a doctorate degree. And the message behind that, I've always been a statistical person, love quantitative studies, gathering data, analyzing data. Went back for two reasons. I wanted a doctorate degree because I wanted to be called a doctor, and I also wanted to be able to go back and teach and give back from all my years of experience and be an educator so that take my knowledge and give it to other folks. So got my doctorate degree a couple of years later, went taught at two different universities for a total of about 12 years. Only reason I stopped teaching is because I decided what I really want to be when I grow up. I've done IT software project management, worked in healthcare, worked in telecom, worked as a consultant. But I love accounting and finance. So I went back, got another master's degree in taxation in 2019. So here we are today. Really got out of the corporate world 5 years ago and said, hey, I'm going to focus on what I enjoy doing. Opened up my own insurance agency, got the financial service side. During that all my education time, I got my securities license, so it allowed me to do financial stuff, IRAs, 401ks, index annuities, all that stuff. But also allowed me now, I said, hey, I'm going to leave corporate America. I want to work with small startup businesses, get their accounting to where it needs to be. Because every time all my clients that are self-employed, the biggest issue they have is managing their finances. How do we manage it right? How do I know what I'm doing? How do I know where I'm going to be at in 20 years? Can I actually retire based on work being self-employed? So that's where I come in. First, I say, hey, we need to get set up on a good accounting software. I don't care what you use, but I need to be able to see what you're doing and then sit down with you after about 6 months to see how you're spending money. And then I go out and do seminars with these small business owners on wants and needs. What do I need to do my day-to-day and live day-to-day, and what are my wants? What gets people in trouble with their small businesses and life is their wants. We all want to drive a Lamborghini, but our budget only allows us to drive a Toyota. Don't go out and get that Lamborghini knowing that you can't afford that Lamborghini. And I always work with younger folks today is like, the way the housing market is today, housing is expensive.
Yes.
But there's no reason for you to go out and buy a brand new car when you and living in an apartment paying $2,500 a month, $1,500, $1,000 a month car payment. Go spend $3,000 a month on a mortgage and then get a car that's going to get you from point A to point B. As long as the car is running, operational, you don't need expensive cars. My vehicles now are 10 years old. I bought one brand new, I bought one used. They are paid for. They get me from point A to point B. Yeah, I would love to have a brand new electric car, Tesla. I've looked at the Lucid, but do I actually need those things? No, I don't need those things to live day to day. I would prefer to have money to travel, do things, and not worry about, oh, I'm paying $1,500 a month for a car to include insurance. So that's a little bit about me. What questions do you have?
What amazing background. And Jeremy, when I listen to you, obviously you follow your instincts, you follow your passion. But what I love the most, what stood out from everything you shared, how much you followed your passion, and you were not afraid to make a change, adjust, and then continue, not only to continue learning, to experiment, but the fact that you are getting word of mouth referrals that you don't even promote in marketing. I mean, it's true, guys. This is how I learn about Jeremy. And I'm like, he's a well-kept secret. Let's get secret out. And that's exactly what we're doing here on this Legacy Leader Show. Before we continue on this path, I have a question for you. Obviously, I discovered something I didn't have a clue. You are also European transplant and you grew up in different environment. And when you came to this country, you came obviously as an immigrant. And do you mind sharing what was the road around that and specifically around financial education? And as well, how did you get in military? Because I want for everybody to see what is possible. So a lot of times I keep hearing, oh, it's easy. They're Americans. They grew up here. They know all the rules and policies and everything else. And on contrary, you have to learn them. You have to learn them yourself. And do you mind sharing that story, please?
Yeah, you know, so originally born in England, came to the U.S. My dad was military. My mom was from England, came to the U.S., when I was 3 years old. Yeah, I grew up in the U.S., but I didn't find out until I tried to join the military that I was not a U.S. citizen because my mom never got me a U.S. birth certificate. And at the time, her and my dad were not married, so therefore, I wasn't a U.S. citizen. So when I went into, the thing about the U.S. military is, as long as you're an allied with an allied country where you're born, you can become a U.S. military soldier. So then I went into the military. It was great. Got into the military, learned a lot about computers. I had to learn a lot, but it's just a different path. Here I am thinking, oh, I'm a U.S. citizen. I go in the military. I find out I'm not. So then I had to go and get my green card because I came over on my mom. So I got a green card, went into the military. When I got out of the military in 1990, when I finished my undergrad degree, I wanted to go back, get it back into the Air Force Reserve, because originally I was in the Army. So I go back and the guy says, you cannot come back into the military now unless you are a U.S. citizen. So I went back and got my citizenship, U.S. citizen. That was the only reason. And the only thing it allowed me to do was to be able to bear arms if I wanted to, own a weapon in the U.S., and to vote. That was it. So got my citizenship. Now I'm able to vote, do other things. Didn't impact me education-wise because you didn't have to be a U.S. citizen to do American universities. But I learned a lot over the years just looking at the American culture and, you know, when people find out, for one, they find out that, oh, he's from England. Is he a citizen? And then they find out, you know, I have a white mom from England and I have a black dad from the U.S. And they're always like, okay, what nationality is he? So, so don't judge a book by its cover. At the end of the day, I am who I am. And I'm all about giving back to people, taking my knowledge, what I've learned, and working with folks. I mean, I look at the way things are going today in the U.S. and I'm just a person, I go back years. You know, all the political stuff that goes on and regarding we need to protect the borders. My thought is people don't understand true history. We talk about Hispanics coming into the U.S. across the border legally. My thought is it was their land first. We pushed them out. When we look at on the other spectrum of Native Americans, and I learned this in a class this year, and I'm all about education and knowledge and learning. And with the nonprofit I work with, we had a class on Native American history. And I didn't realize there were 60 million Native Americans in the U.S. And then when other folks came over, they pushed them out, try to make that generation extinct. There's only 6 million in the U.S. today. So, you know, I'm very passionate about other races, other cultures. I taught international business for 10 years. I have friends from all over the globe, Europe, India, Japan, Australia. Now I have clients in over 25 states, three countries. just by, like I said before, word of mouth, talking to people, people moving. But I have people that send me stuff from Australia to get their taxes done that are US citizens, but they live in Australia. But I used to have a passion for this stuff. I mean, it's just being able to get back. I've always been told, you know, I'm always trying to be the caretaker, take care of everybody.
That's wonderful.
Question.
Yes, it does. And I just want to say that is such a wonderful journey, and I'm glad you shared that with us. And I can't agree, because both of us come from such a strong international backgrounds, and how richer our life is as a result of it. And what I really love, again, is how not threatening, because having conversation on something you truly don't know, or you should maybe know, you kind of feel also shamed, because frankly, even me growing up in Europe and then coming as a young adult in the United States, through all of my education that I had in Europe, and also obviously here again, studying for another bachelor's degree and then finishing my master's degree, there was no much education around the finance. I mean, you know, the basic open a checking account, having saving, how to write a check, reconcile, you know, checks and balances, but all these other nuances that every adult should know before they start making these important decisions, like you mentioned earlier, mortgage versus rent, expensive car versus car that gets you to A to point B, what's relevant, what matters the most, how that also can deplete you or set you up for financial success. So I'd love to, if you don't mind sharing for everybody watching and listening, could you mind focusing what are the some common patterns that you see that everybody's consistently failing, regardless of amount of education and how old they are, and that you really see the huge gap that it's not providing the most crucial educational components to it?
So, you know, we really have to look at going back. I always say things start in the home, but we look at today's educational system. I have clients that don't know how to write a check, don't know how to balance their checkbook, don't understand what it means to plan for retirement and putting stuff away. And I try to educate, and I actually have had a couple of people text me this morning, which is kind of crazy. I did a seminar at a church a couple of months ago, and it was all around finances and planning for retirement and making sure that you leave a legacy for your family. Don't leave them stuck with all your debt. Don't leave them where they can't pay for funerals. I've been to too many where they're passing around the hat to try to pay for things. But you know, the biggest gap is understanding finances and how they actually work, and not realizing, you know, I have clients that call me, oh, I'm going to get involved in this business. It's, you know, after you get done talking about it, it's a pyramid scheme. You're not going to make any money. Quit putting money in the stuff that's not there. And by the way, find something that you enjoy doing. You don't want to be in 40 years when you retire, says, I hated my job for 40 years. No, find something you're passionate about and then give it your all, and you'll enjoy life. And then we look at what is it going to take for us to make sure we're financially sound? And it all goes back to those wants and those needs. We don't know what the future holds, but we got to plan for that future. Because if we don't have finances set up correctly, then you're going to be, you know, you find too many people in their 70s. Retired from their job, living on Social Security, but they got to still work because they didn't have someone to guide them in order to make sure that they were financially sound. I mean, I'm working with young people now, my young clients that are self-employed, hairstylists, estheticians. I'm working with them. I get their business set up the correct way. And then I make sure, whether they want to or not, we're setting up you an IRA account. We can do a Roth or a traditional. What do you prefer? Matter of fact, we're going to do both. That way we have some write-off on your taxes. And then we can have that Roth where you, when you do retire, and I show them, this is how much money you could have future value. And I show them a low interest rate, 3 to 5%, how much of your money would grow. And then you're able to retire when you want to. But then, you know, 20 years from now, you want to get a different place. You have money put away to do so. I tell people we don't want to be house poor. We don't want to be insurance poor. I don't write life insurance on folks just to have them in 12 months cancel it, because when people get in financial binds, the first thing they want to do is get rid of their insurance. I make sure it's something that they can afford where they don't miss it. So it's just understanding all those aspects of things, but the everyday common person today, whether you're 18 coming out of high school, or you went to work somewhere and you were never given any type of education or training on what your 401k means, what's your 401k doing? How much do I need to put away to make sure that I can retire, but also enjoy life while it's here? Because none of us are guaranteed tomorrow. But you got to make sure you plan for tomorrow in case tomorrow does come.
That is such a powerful share. And you're spot on, preparing for tomorrow, but then have everything obviously in order. But again, also continue to live and have a fulfilling life, meaningful life, right? And it's so true that we see what we put a meaning to is a the flashy stuff, or it's a quality time with family. And I love what you mentioned, how important it is to you to be able to travel. And I know that a lot of people don't get a chance to see the world or meet people from different parts of the world. And as a result, they don't really understand, you know, what else is out there. And that is other better ways or to live and have a chance and opportunity to fulfill not only their passions, but also to really self-discover. So I'm curious, obviously, you had a plenty of opportunities to work with female small business owners. And I know that so many of us, including myself, you know, been through so many financial advising and strategies. And I have to say, what I always found to be really interesting is that power dynamic between us, that financial advisor, or, you know, where they don't want to necessarily explain or tell you how something works or why certain things needs to be a certain way, or whether maybe other alternatives are. It's almost like, don't worry, I will take care of it, versus, you know, let me explain it, this is what I mean. And being partner in those choices and decisions. So what do you see there traditionally, and then how you do differently, and what can you give a word of advice for female small business owners at this time?
I always tell people, so I've done some seminars, and I always ask the question, when you're in a room with a bunch of financial people, insurance agents, you know, raise your hand if you're in the business for the money. More than half will raise their hand. They're only in the business for the money. They could care less about their client. All they want to do, write the business, move on to the next client. Every client that I service, rather be taxes, insurance, financial stuff, I try to build some type of relationship with them to understand what their needs and wants are. And I would say 75% of my business owners are female business owners. You know, I have 5 daughters. I'm all about making sure, I'm all about women's equity, make sure women do well. I mean, the glass ceiling to me should not even be there. If you're educated, you know what you're doing, you should be treated the same as a male. So when I look at when a female business owner is working with a financial advisor, the key there is to make sure that financial advisor has your best interest in mind. Too many, like I said before, too many financial advisors are just in the business to make money. They don't have a passion for what they're doing. They're trying to get their commission off of that investment and then move on to the next person. I'll give you a prime example. I had a client that was working with a financial advisor at Chase, and she decided to leave her money with Chase. When she called, when the market was very volatile, when we had the crash during COVID, she kept calling the financial advisor. Oh, that advisor is no longer here. You don't have an advisor assigned to you. She lost $90,000. Wow. That financial advisor at Chase would have been available. They would have said, hey, I see some things going on. We might want to move your money out of the fund it's in and put it into a money market account until the market stabilizes off. But having that relationship with that person. So I guess what? Now I just moved that client. She's my tax client. She's now my financial client also, because I just moved all her money away from Chase. And I told her, you know, I'm going to watch your stuff and I have your best interest. Matter of fact, I moved her to a portfolio where my commission doesn't come out of her funds. The company that I moved it to, they paid me. And the commission is 1% compared to 5%. I'm not in it for the money. Yeah, I want to make some money, get paid. But I want to make sure I protect my client. And knowing that she went through that, I said, hey, I'm going to move you to a company that I know sound is doing well, has a huge portfolio. And by the way, I get paid less.
Mm-hmm.
That tells her he has my best interest in mind. So either, I mean, rather be male or female, but you know, all my female business owners, I just make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do and make sure they're managing their money well.
Have, let me look at the landscape just of United States, and what is the percentage of small businesses and enterprises composed of versus the Fortune 500, and in terms of not only size and revenue. So when you have a 97% small businesses, that's an alarming huge difference, right? Huge percentage. And then when you also see how many women are trying so hard and how much hits have been done on the small business, not only just now during the COVID, but also post-COVID with this more current volatile economic downturns, I want to make sure that everybody, again, watching and listening, specifically women, because I know that is a lot of struggle there. You struggle in corporate side, you struggle when you're running your own business, and how important it is to surround yourself with the winning team, with people that have the best interest for the company, best interest for you as a owner, as a leader, and also how often women don't either ask or don't step up in their power to really navigate these complexities. So what would be some advice for them? Not to, of course, exclude the men, it's not that, but it's more about truly to see where is the vulnerability right now and how that we can really help and give a little bit of tools specifically for female owners to step up in their power and make some really good, smart decisions.
You know, when we look at that, it's really working with female small business owners and really understanding the gaps within their business. What are their pain points? What's keeping them up at night? What do they need help with? And being able to work with them to get them connected with the right people, working with the right people, getting their business out there, letting others know what they're actually doing. But it's mainly understanding the gaps and what's keeping them up at night. And if we can figure out those things and then putting the tools in place and say, you need to do this, this, and this in order to overcome that gap, and then monitor it to see where they're at, 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, 1 year, based on the plans we put together, rather be financially, strategic, marketing, building relationships, adding additional clientele, making sure that they stay on path to do that, holding them accountable. A lot of people that I work with now, I mean, I have clients every 3 months, we get together. I'm on the phone with them or they come into my office, we're meeting in person just to go over where are you at financially? What have you done strategically? Have you put some money away? How are you growing your business? I'm working with right now a lot of new stylists and estheticians that are just now new into the business. It's all been word of mouth. They say, hey, you want the right person to work with, you need to call Jeremy. He's going to get you on the right path, get you going. I get them set up with insurance, their investments. And then I talk to them, see what are you doing to grow your business? Don't go buy leads, you know, do some social media, but social media is great to advertise a business. But I'm from the old school. If you don't go out and build relationships with people, you're not going to have them as a client down the road. You're not going to be able to expand your operations. It's not going to be, hey, do you know somebody that does taxes? Hey, I got a good tax guy for you. You probably just need to talk to him. And don't be, you know, I talk to people all the time about taxes. And I have a client come in, they'll sit in my office for an hour. We're going over strategy, what they need to do. And the first thing they say, what do I owe you? You don't owe me anything. I'm giving you my knowledge so that you can have it. Now, down the road, you may come back and say, hey, can you do my taxes? Can I get some insurance? That's how I'm going to get my blessings and get my payment. I do a lot of stuff for people that I just sit down and talk to them. What do you need? What are you looking for? You know, I'm not like an attorney. I could probably double my income if I charged everybody for everything that I did. But, you know, it all goes back to if you have knowledge, be willing to give that knowledge to people so they can have it. I don't have a problem. You know, I went and did a seminar for 100 people at a church. I didn't charge to go do it. I didn't charge to go speak. I'm doing an education class for the National Associate Tax Professionals Cotterall chapter. I'm doing a class the first week of August. And they were asking me, well, what are you going to charge to do the tax class? I said, I have knowledge. I'm an educator at heart first. If I can teach somebody something, rather be golf, bowling, taxes, insurance, finance, my information is free. I'm not charging for it because down the road, you're going to come back and need something that I have to charge you for, that I'm going to charge you for. But you keep that mindset. I've been able to, in the last 5 years, generate more income for my business than I ever made working in corporate America. There's nothing wrong with corporate America, but the problem is too many people, they're so tied up on titles. And I always tell people, when I had a business, when I worked in corporate America, when I worked in project management, you know, I'm a senior IT guy. I got people reporting to me. I've been a program manager. And I told everybody, you do not work for me. Yeah, we all work for the company. We work together as a team. If we can't build something as a team together, you're only as good as the people around you. If I have a good staff and they're around me and they're working, we're all going to be successful. Yeah, at the end of the day, I had to write your review, this and that. I'm going to be fair in everything. But if we work together, you know, Rome was not built in a day by one person. It was built by many people that yeah. worked together to do it. And that's how we're all going to be successful in what we're doing.
I love that attitude and approach because as educator, fellow educator, once educator, always educator. And you're right, it's giving people opportunities, but it's really down on that one-on-one. What can you do? What they're going through, listening, be able to advise and provide great insight. And people flock and gravitate to people that they feel like they're understood, accepted, they can trust. And obviously finance is one of the biggest, most sensitive subjects to so many, just the way how we were raised, just the way how we've seen our lives unfolding when we were young. And even as a young adult, or a little later on, with all the losses and gains and so many things. And we've seen, as a result, as you mentioned, you know, so much shift, and people will come and attract. And I think that's the best marketing and business growth tip for everybody watching and listening. Just be the best version of you and serve. And then before you know, that service, which is so great at it, is going to generate not only people that wants to do work with you, but also obviously income that supports you and your family for years to come. With that in mind, you also serving in on the boards, and you've been such a great community leader, not only obviously you mentioned through the church and speaking and other avenues and platforms, but also supporting specific causes. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that? Because I want everybody to really see what's possible. You can have all the great education, but if you don't apply, it doesn't matter. But then when you apply it, how powerful is that, Jeremy?
Well, you know, I always look at when I'm out, when I've worked with people over the years, when I've been in education, when I was teaching at the universities, where I see somebody in the street that says, hey, that's Doc. Hey, Dr. T, how you doing? You know, it's just that, you know, I loved your class. I love what you were able to give us. You know, I work with a couple of nonprofits right now. I sit on a couple of boards. I have one that I do that is in North Carolina. They focus on generational trauma and how can we educate people on generational trauma. I mean, I could tell people stories from me growing up, things that happened in my life, who made me I am today. And I always talk to people about, you know, I have clients that's been through things, that's been abused, all that stuff. I tell them, I've been there. I know what that's all about. The only one that can make those changes in your life, you cannot erase the past. You can't forget it, but you have to make that change going forward. Dive into something. You know, they always say, if you grew up with an alcoholic parent, either you're going to be an alcoholic or you're going to say, I'm not going to do that. I want to be different than them. That was me. Mm-hmm. But working with, you know, another found, I'm all about the youth and making sure kids understand the importance of education. You know, I'm involved with my fraternity. We have a program called Go to High School, Go to College. We have a group called Young Men of Alpha. We take these kids from 6th, 7th, 8th grade, get them ready for high school, keep them in our program. That way when they go to graduate, they're ready to go to college. Working with the youth, working with, you know, talking to women that's been through things, that's had an abusive relationship and getting them to understand you don't have to live that way. You know, put that behind you, move on. Same with men. I've talked with men that's been in bad relationships where the woman's been the abuser, and getting them to understand that's not how life is supposed to be. Folks have problems, but being able to sit and listen to folks, you know, like I said, I have a passion about education, families, youth, make sure folks are doing the right thing. And then making sure that, you know, if I can get you to somewhere better stable, then, you know, that's going to be good for everyone all the way around.
I love that. And again, it's important to, I love opportunities to serve, obviously, others specifically in such a very challenging situations. And generational trauma, it's a serious issue. And I'm glad that they have great support and opportunity to find not only someone who can relate to them, but also to really show again what is possible. As you said, we can choose to be victim of circumstances, or we can choose to be victor, and then as a result, obtain and have a very different, fulfilled, happy, and financially secure life. So with that in mind, from all of the years of experience and everything that you accomplished and achieved, that you obviously lived and led tremendous legacy. So now when we look at with this new chapter in your life, obviously, when you said you separated 5 years ago and have such amazing, substantial growth and great business and opportunity to give and support others, what is left in a bucket list, Mr. Tucker? And also, what is left there that you really feel like you wanted to establish and shape further your legacy with?
I really just taking my knowledge and working with different organizations. I understand what it takes to run a business, working with other small businesses or large entities and making sure that their structure is great. I want to be able to, you know, when it's my time to go to the pearly gates, that I'm remembered as someone who made a difference in someone's life. They always say, make a difference in someone's life every day if you can. But I want to be one that's remembered as this person cared about what we were doing, rather be school, taxes, finances, how our business was running, you know, what knowledge he provided to us, how he educated folks. You know, I want to write a couple of books in the next few years about whatever I can come up with. I decided a couple of years, about 2 years ago, to start a podcast, and the name of the company is going to be I Understand, but what are we doing to move forward? Because everyone has a story, everyone has an issue, we all have gone through different things. And I tell people, I always say, I understand, but this is what we got to do to fix this. And so I want to start a podcast when things slow down with me, when I'm doing other stuff, which they probably will never slow down. But it's all about, I do understand what you're going through, but what are you doing to make things different in your life to get things where they need to be? And I'm going to write a couple of books. Everyone tells me you need to write your life story. You know, a lot of things that people don't know about me. I say, yeah, one day I'm going to sit down and start putting it together. And then write some books on entrepreneurship. You know, there's a lot of good, and the problem with the books that are out there now, they're 300 pages. Who's going to sit down and read a 300 page book on how to get my business going? You know, what color is your parachute? That book is thick. Why can't we write a series of books to make it small, easy reason? Well, you can sit down and read this book in an hour and give someone a thought about, I need to do this with my business. We look at children's books today. Let's go back to what a children's book is. It's, you know, 10 to 15 pages. We can write books on entrepreneurship the same way and do a series of books to give people, say, hey, you're starting new in your business. Don't go sit down here for 5 hours and read this book. Here's what you need to do to start this. Here's five things to do to get your business off the ground. Rather be from registering with the IRS, getting you set up with the state. Here's the path to get started going. Then we write a book on just, how am I going to market my business? Here's five easy things that I can do to market my business. Everybody wants to blast on emails and this and that. No, number one thing to do to market your business, go out and talk to people. I own an insurance agency. I've had it for 5 years. I don't buy leads because leads are people that shop in every 6 months for insurance. No, I go out and talk to people. Who's your insurance with? Can I give you a quote? End the discussion. It's yes or no. Move on to the next. But I go out and talk to people, pass out a card. Here, call me if you ever need to get a quote on insurance. I taught that seminar. I've had four people this morning call me about life insurance. And I am a life insurance proponent. At the end of the day, when I got into the business, because I've been to too many services where people don't have life insurance and they're passing the hat around. Everyone needs to have life insurance to make sure that when a loved one passes away, we're able to take care of those services and have something left behind for your family. You don't need to be insurance poor, but make sure you have life insurance. So that goes back to what my passions are, right? So it's like I want to educate people on whatever I can. Anytime I get knowledge, I want to pass it on to somebody else.
That is wonderful. Since again, for it's never too late to learn new things, to get educated, to know more, and then to do better. With that in mind, in the closing, what would be one message from everything you see that is going on right now for entrepreneurs? One thing that you would strongly advise them to do from everything that they, if they're starting, if they're already been in existence with their businesses, but one thing that you see commonly, the highest need to establish or do, what that would be.
That's a big question. The one thing I would say is just be passionate about what you do. Don't worry about the money because the money will come as long as you have the passion for what you're doing. Just talk to people about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.